all absorbed into the gut wall, and although some cancers use glutamine as fuel, it doesn't feed the cancer in the same way as glucose. By helping to salvage my gut lining and maintain a better microbiome, it would help maintain my precious immune system, vital for my long-term survival. The effects of my cancer-starving supplements, berberine, EGCG, Gymnema sylvestre, hydroxycitrate, pycnogenol, silibinin, and a low-glycemic diet, made the chemo far more effective than either I or my oncologist had hoped for. To my absolute joy, after my first round of chemo, my blood markers plummeted from nearly 600 to 130, below the normal range of 150. The relief of being in that normal bracket again was huge, although I knew it was quite possibly false hope and a temporary reprieve. Chemo on its own never cures my type of cancer. It merely puts it on the back burner for a while. But it was time to celebrate. I had won a small battle. Andrew and I went out that night for a quiet meal in the local Italian restaurant. Perhaps high-dose chemotherapy was okay after all. Tempting though it was to think otherwise, I knew it was unlikely I had won the war. And after another 2 months of the toxic infusions, I was steadily feeling worse and worse. By now, I was completely bald and the nausea was unbearable. Would this maximum tolerated dose kill me as my oncologist and I feared? Enough was enough. I was being dragged down and no longer felt empowered and in control. I was feeling frail and weak, yet again becoming a passive and submissive patient. I had to find the strength to stand up for my rights and have chemotherapy on my own terms. I was in a tough spot. I realized the wrong decision might mean the difference between survival, permanently disabling side effects, or worse, death. But I was comfortable with my choice. A lower dose might be equally effective and less damaging. Somehow, I had to persuade my oncologist to drop the dose. But she had been so insistent, I knew it wasn't going to be an easy debate to win. Exhausted, my willpower and my energy drained, my spirit quashed, how would I persuade her? After a lengthy discussion with my hypnotherapist, I decided I'd try the bolshy patient tactic. I was going to be an obstinate, difficult, and bloody-minded. Passive patients die, noisy ones survive. Known fact. It is your body. Don't forget that. You have every right to refuse chemotherapy if you want, he'd said. I knew that, but it was so hard to break the doctor's always right mentality. It's hardwired into our psyche. We are conditioned from a young age to follow every suggestion that leaves their mouths. Oncologists seem to dismiss the Warburg effect, the differing metabolism of cancer or how to alter it. Was I now becoming just as much of an expert in my own cancer as the oncologist? Did much of what they suggested stem from the NICE guidelines, from following the recommendations of always biased pharmaceutical companies, or from a fear of being sued? Rather than take a risk and try something different, do most just follow the herd? I refuse to be a sheep. I was a 1964 baby, the Chinese year of the dragon. Time to summon my inner dragon and exhale some fire. My therapist made me repeat the phrase, "I am in control, my body can heal," several times a day. The more I said it, the more I began to believe it and regain the feeling of being back in the driving seat. Yes, I could steer the treatment direction back down my path. Yes, I knew I needed lower dose chemotherapy. I could fight the disease on my own terms. The positive affirmations helped me switch off my defeatist attitude and empowered me enormously. When I next saw my oncologist, I begged her to stop the chemo completely. I knew she was unlikely to do it, but I told her I felt dreadful, that it was intolerable. I laid it on thick, describing terrible stomach pains, telling her that I'd been sick for a week. Of course, it was not all true, but I called on my best drama skills, gave an Oscar-worthy performance, and gave her no choice. It worked. She promised to lower the dose right down for my last 3 months. As your blood markers have remained steady, below normal ranges, I'll drop the dose, she said. And we'll keep the remainder in reserve if you ever need more. I nearly hugged her. I was so relieved. I believe she saved my life that day. Despite the lower dose, my 6-month chemotherapy was still a grueling endurance event, like competing in the Volvo Ocean Yacht Race with no stopovers. I was also vaguely aware that on top of the chemo and radiotherapy I'd already been given, this second wave of chemo might encourage a secondary type of cancer in the bone marrow called leukemia. I shrugged that off. No, I was strong and fit enough not to succumb to that, wasn't I? Chapter 8. Keeping the Beast in Its Box. By the summer of 2000, I had finally finished my chemotherapy. I had survived 9 months, far longer than my predicted expiry date of weeks, and my cancer blood markers were good. Now I just needed to keep them there, or better yet, push them further down, as far as possible. How low could I go? I was bald, exhausted, and still full of toxic chemical garbage, but I was alive. I was wary that after high-dose chemotherapy, cancer tends to return with a vengeance, harder and faster than ever, because of the lack of any immune control. The body has been wrecked and ruined by the treatment, so chemotherapy was ultimately self-defeating. It's at this point, looking at a reduced or absent tumor, that most patients take their foot off the gas, switch to cruise control, breathe a sigh of relief, and assume they're cured. They return to bad habits and carry on as they were before their diagnosis. This was a common and fatal mistake. There was so much more I needed to do. I was confident I was starving the cancer of glucose, but not confident that the diet and the berberine would be enough. I needed to detox, get rid of any remnants of the chemotherapy, and rebuild my gut, which I assumed would be badly damaged. My bone marrow, if that too had been hit, I hoped would heal on its own. My hair would eventually regrow. That was the least of my worries. I would just have to keep my fingers crossed about the possibility of future leukemia and hope it wouldn't happen to me. I couldn't find any statistics on this, as women with my stage of cancer died in weeks. I was apparently a goner already. Post-chemo, my plan was to 1. Detox with a hardcore macrobiotic, low GI, pescatarian, anti-inflammatory, low saturated fat diet for 3 months. Must think up a name for it. 2. Check my gut microbes at Great Smoky's Laboratory, now Genova Diagnostics. 3. Check my micronutrient status, minerals, vitamins, fatty acid profile. 4. Take intravenous vitamin C and UVBI, ultraviolet blood irradiation, as soon as possible. 5. Exercise more, go sailing, and enjoy life. 6. Launch a new business. Perhaps not one of my better ideas. By this stage, I had become a supplement junkie. Relaxing my rigid self-imposed timetable for even a day was a luxury I felt I couldn't afford. I wanted to control glucose release at every meal. I got stressed out when I missed taking them. Would the cancer get the upper hand? Every meal seemed like a life or death decision. Would the meal feed the cancer, or would it starve it, help to heal my body and boost recovery? For now, I seemed to be keeping it under control. My blood tests showed I was still in remission. But how long could I sustain this lifestyle? Did I really need to be so tough on myself? On the other hand, was I doing enough? Would the supplements and diet really protect me? Would the cancer mutate and come back with a rage and force I wouldn't be able to contain? The only way to keep track of my progress was to take regular blood markers. That way, I could be on the case immediately if it made an unwelcome return visit. If diabetic patients need to control glucose and insulin release every mealtime, then so did I. Both levels spike after meals, and this seemed to be the critical time to control it. I didn't know anyone else approaching cancer in this way, but to me it seemed like common sense. I had felt too ill after chemotherapy sessions to be able to take much of anything, let alone supplements. However, in the preceding days before each session, I would hoof lots of cancer-starving compounds to carry me through. Now I was feeling better, I was making up for that. If berberine controlled glucose release into the blood, then I concluded the best time to take it would probably be just before a meal. This was not easy going, but eventually it became a habit, religiously pill-popping at breakfast, lunchtime, and supper. The downsides were that taking as many as I did, washed down with green tea and even sometimes olive oil, I could end up a bit nauseous again. Sleep had been an issue for years, ever since the first diagnosis. To help that, I took melatonin at night, an hour before bedtime. It has immune-boosting effects, such as IL-2 and IL-12, good cytokines, which are controlled by the pineal gland. But I now wondered whether I needed to take as much. I was afraid I had switched off my own endogenous supply and suspected I would have to stay on melatonin for life. Fear and worry were my bed pals. Racing thoughts were hard to push aside. There seemed to be no escape from the nightmare. If I stopped the supplements, the cancer might return. That was not a risk I wanted to take. There was to be no denial of cancer, no going back to the carefree life I had before. Organization was going to be paramount. Nothing could be left to chance if I wanted to keep the beast in its box. I made a chart of everything I was taking, wrote a list of where I was obtaining each supplement, and made note of phone numbers and websites for reordering. Every Friday, I would dedicate an hour in the afternoon to preparing for the week ahead, filling sachets and ordering up any supplements running low. Normal pill boxes just weren't big enough. Maracas, indeed. It was an effort, but the choice was this, or quite possibly death. No choice at all, to my mind. I became exceptionally strict with myself. Cancer was lifestyle related, wasn't it? If I believed the media stories, I would never have got cancer if I'd looked after myself better. But others lived far worse lifestyles than I did. I knew that blaming myself for my situation was not constructive. Instead, I harnessed the strength of my feelings, the anger, guilt, grief, sadness, fear and worry about my diagnosis to spur me on. My expanding list of supplements, visits to integrative doctors, tests and organic food was costing a small fortune, but I needed this lifeline. We weren't poor, but even so it was a struggle. How could every cancer patient afford all this? And now I decided I needed intravenous vitamin C. Yet another expense. Andrew never again mentioned the drain on our finances. He was 100% supportive. Even so, I felt terribly guilty that I was denying us both a much-needed holiday and digging into pensions and reserves. There can be so many unspoken factors weighing down on the subconscious of the patient, sapping precious energy, piling yet more stress onto the already overburdened psyche. But if the boot were on the other foot, I would do the same in a heartbeat. Under the care of the medical profession, there's a sense of security, a safety net to catch you, that there is something being done. When I came to the end of my 6 months of chemotherapy, I was going it alone. I had been cut loose, and like many patients in this situation, I felt vulnerable. But I'd already found my integrative doctors, alternative treatments. I was also empowered with knowledge. I didn't wait around in limbo waiting for it to come back. There was so much more I could do. I couldn't rest on my laurels, keep my fingers crossed, hoping time would erase the memory of the dreadful treatments and the diagnosis, believing everything would be okay. I'd already been down that road, and it had led to more cancer. This time I wouldn't be complacent. While my tumour load was low and I was still in relatively good shape, I felt it was a good time to be proactive, to be taking control, not waiting for the axe to fall yet again. knowing each time the cancer would become more and more difficult to treat. Top of my list